this week after being out all of last week participating in the Race Across America, and I'm trying to tell the story in three parts this week here in the 8:15 segment. So yesterday, told you about the start in Oceanside, California. I was part of an eight-man relay team. You can do this race either as a solo, two-man, four-man, or eight-man relay. And the race is from Oceanside, California to Annapolis, Maryland. It's 3,100 miles long, and it's you on the open roads. There are rules to obey, but it's basically, here's the start, and the first one to get to the East Coast is the winner. So we last left it with our team having rolled into the border town of Parker, Arizona. We split our eight-man relay team into two four-man teams. We thought that would be logistically the best idea, and a lot of this is ad-libbing on the fly. But we figured if we had a four-man team that could go ahead with its two drivers in the RV and get some sleep way down the road, maybe check into a hotel, have a shower, then the other four-man team with its two drivers driving the two follow vans would ride all the way up to that hotel and then trade off, and the next four-man team would take it from there and do the next, say, 200 or 250 miles, while the other four could get some sleep and a shower. So that's how we were doing it, leapfrogging our two four-man teams all the way around the country. So we rode through the night, the first night, through the California and Arizona desert. And one story I forgot to tell you yesterday was we blew through a Border Patrol stop. And it was hard. It was hard to see. We were very, very, very close in far southern California to the Mexican border. Mm. And I saw what looked like a way station up ahead. And I was at the time following a German rider and their team van. So I'm maybe 300 or 400 feet behind them. Maybe not even that much. And when you approach the Border Patrol, they had the right lane blocked off. So the Germans, I guess being unfamiliar with our Border Patrol protocol, went to the left, oncoming traffic lane. Now, this is like 3 in the morning, so there's no other cars coming. They go left, and just out of instinct, I went left and followed them. Because it didn't dawn on me, A, that was a Border Patrol stop, and B, that it was open. It looked closed. I didn't see any lights or human life. But as we go by it, I see a Border Patrol agent waving at us frantically. And I wave back thinking, oh, he's just waving at the race.
You were thinking, oh, he recognizes you.
And he screams, stop! So we pull over.
I'm racing.
We pull over and he goes, what the hell are you doing? And we said, one of the German guys said, we're in a bike race. And he goes, yeah, I know. I've seen about 100 of you guys come through here tonight. I don't know why anybody would want to ride their bike through this desert with all the creatures out there and the sandstorms in the middle of the night. You guys are insane.
Oh, no.
And we said, yes, we are. But then they let us go through. So we made our way to the border town of Parker, Arizona. We slept for a couple of hours at the hotel there while the next four guys rode on about the next 200 miles. Got about 3 hours of sleep that night. So first night, I get 3 hours of sleep.
Sleeping.
Then we wake up and we get in the RV and we drive to the next transition point, which is Prescott, Arizona. And we get there about midday, and now it's our four turn to ride, while the others will leapfrog ahead of us, find a hotel, and get some sleep. This was another scorcher of a day. I told you yesterday, our first 2 days in the California and Arizona deserts were in an extreme heat wave, and it's always hot there, so if it's an extreme heat wave, you know it's bad. In the valleys, temps were about 113. On the climbs, they cooled down to 108. So the ride from Prescott to Flagstaff, Arizona, which is the next transition point, was boiling hot. And in our group of four riders, it was me, Jonah, John, and Grant. Well, Grant had a mechanical problem, but our mechanic who was on the road with us was already up in Flagstaff. So they had to drive, and our van was also overheating. So he had a bike and van problem. So the driver, Maureen, and Grant, the rider, had to take the overheating van and the messed up bike all the way into Flagstaff. So now it's leaving just the three of us to rotate in this hot weather. So we're taking extra pulls, riding extra mileage. Eventually, Grant got back out and met us as we were heading into Flagstaff. And that was one of the best rides of the whole event for me. I got to do about a 15-mile leg on St. Mary Lake Road, which is just south of Flagstaff, at sunset.
That's a nice area.
It's a beautiful area. And it, you know, after such a scorcher of a day, it started to cool off. And I'm looking to the left, and there's this giant pink sky behind these mountains. And St. Mary Lake, the pink sky was reflecting off the lake. So you had pink water, dark mountains, pink sky, light breeze. It was just, it was one of those moments that I'd hoped for in this race.
You didn't attempt to shake hand Instagram?
No.
With your phone while you're riding?
I wanted to just soak it in.
Did you see the walk-up Sky Dome, home of the Lumberjacks?
No, yeah. I didn't see that.
Largest wooden structure in North America.
No, I didn't see that. But I did see that beautiful vista, and you know, my favorite part of the United States is the Southwest. I love New Mexico, Colorado, Utah, and Arizona. I think it's the most beautiful, soulful landscape that we have in America. So to get to ride through that and to get to see that incredible sunset, that was a great highlight for me.
Awesome.
We go into Flagstaff. I get another 3 hours of sleep that night. So that's 6 hours now that I've got the first two nights. So I'm doing okay with very little sleep. I feel really good on the bike, and I'm wide awake when I'm off it. Although now we've only been on the road for 36 hours, a day and a half, it feels like we've been out there for a week because it's all becoming a blur. You're having trouble remembering what town you just came from, what day it is, what time it is. You know the old saying, the fog of war?
Mm-hmm.
That is exactly what this is like. And I'm not trying to compare it to what the soldiers go through in a war, but you know how they might get a couple of hours sleep and then the commanding officer says, time to move. Well, that's kind of how we felt. We might get 2 hours of sleep and the alarm goes off and you just get up and you get back on the bikes or back in the car and you just move without thinking about it. And no matter what the weather was, hey, it's 120 degrees. Okay, got to get back on the bike. Hey, tropical storm downpour. Okay, got to get back on the bike. You just keep riding because in this eight-man relay, the goal is to always have somebody on the road. And we accomplished that. There was someone constantly riding from our eight-man group. The next day, after waking up from Flagstaff, we drove north about 3 hours to meet the other four to do the trade-off. And the next relay point was at a town called Mexican Hat. And it's right on the Arizona-Utah border, and because there's a giant rock formation where a guy looks like he's wearing a big sombrero. So they call it Mexican Hat. And that was a beautiful drive. The other guys got to ride through Monument Valley, northern Arizona, southern Utah, mostly on Indian reservations, and absolutely breathtaking. I posted a picture from Monument Valley on Instagram, that incredible rock formation and the way the sun hits it. You've got this desert, but the shooting up from the desert are these incredible rock formations, and they all look like monuments. They all look like these sculptures of this and that. I think a lot of times in this country, we gave the Indians a really poor hand when we gave them some of the land for their reservation. Some of it's awful. But in this case, they got beautiful, beautiful land. It was breathtaking. And then the ride from Mexican Hat, our next leg was from there all the way through Utah into Colorado. And that was great. That was one of my better rides too. You're on this wide open road. There's no traffic in that part of the world. You know, even in the middle of the day, it's so desolate. And I got to ride down these great descents and up these steep climbs, but it was beautiful, the scenery on both sides.
So at least at this point, you're tired and everything, but at least you feel like you're seeing America.
Seeing America.
Yeah.
And you know what? Seeing parts of America that I would never see if it weren't for this bike race.
Right.
And speaking of being in remote areas, I was stunned at the lack of cell phone coverage still in large parts of America.
How is that even possible?
I thought at this point every single square inch was covered, but we would go hours without coverage, without being able to talk to the other van or tell the other foursome, hey, how far out we are from our exchange point. So it was really eye-opening that there, especially in the American West, there are still huge parcels of land that are like they were a billion years ago. Well, not a billion years ago, but you know what I mean.
We're not still like they were a billion.
Ride through Utah, cross into the Colorado border, and almost exactly when you cross that border, you go from wide-open high desert into Rocky Mountains. It's kind of weird. The second you cross the border, things get greener in Colorado. You see more pine trees. You see the mountains in the distance for the first time. We saw some snow-capped peaks. And we're all riding really well. The thing that happens in a relay race is you can tell yourself, we've got 3,000 miles to go. We're going to ride easy. You got to save something for the end.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get out there and you know you just have a 40-minute leg, you naturally push as hard as you can.
You ball out.
You ball out. So we're still all riding pretty hard, even though we're all telling each other to kind of throttle back a little bit. We get to Pagosa Springs, and that was where our next transition point was. And they took off, the other foursome. They're going to ride through the night. And we had dinner at a brew pub in Pagosa Springs, all six of us, the four riders and our two drivers, Greg and Maureen.
Drink some burra?
And at that point, no, we didn't have any burra because I believe it's against the race rules.
Oh, way to go, George.
Sorry.
The drivers and riders cannot have beer at any point during the race.
Yeah, how about wine? Sense.
No alcohol is the point. But at this point, we have found out that we've gotten three penalties. And each penalty costs you 1 hour. I told you yesterday we got a penalty for not having a vehicle in the start chute.
Mm-hmm.
Then we found out we got another penalty for a guy who ran a stop sign out in the middle of the desert in the middle of the night. And it was right as he was getting the transition from another rider behind him. And he had parked just maybe 10 feet in front of the stop sign.
That should count as a stop.
That's what I thought. I thought that was a very ticky-tacky call because I get why the rules in the book, you know, if middle of the day and you come to a busy intersection and a rider blows through the stop sign, that should never happen. He should absolutely be penalized. Mm-hmm. He was in the middle of the California desert. There wasn't a car within 100 miles, and he was basically stopped a few feet before it, but he went through it, and they gave us a one-hour penalty.
How do they know that?
That's an outrage.
Because the race has race officials driving the course constantly, up and down the course. They're following us. They're parked. They'll be parked at a sketchy stop sign or something, waiting for someone to blow through.
How many race officials are there? That's a lot of land they got to cover.
I think there are about 30, and I don't know how many of them are actually on the road. Maybe 15 cars or so are patrolling the road, and you know they're moving across the country as the race is. So we've got two penalties. They gave another one of our vans a penalty for parking too close to the road. So when you pull over to make a transition with another rider or it's the follow vehicle you're going to stop, you have to be 5 feet off of the fog line. Well, the head official saw one of our cars apparently 4 feet off of the fog line. So gave us a penalty for that. And then in Colorado, another one of our riders got a penalty for riding too far out in the lane. His argument was the shoulder was full of debris, and a lot of the shoulders were horrible. I've always said that people who say riders should stay in the shoulder have never ridden in a shoulder because commonly they're full of rocks and glass.
I've flatted out a couple times on the shoulder.
They're terrible. So he was riding out in the lane of traffic, and they said he was too far out there. And so they gave him a penalty for that. So we've got three penalties that count against our time and the disqualification. And I think it's if you got five penalties, you were disqualified.
Oh, really?
Whoa.
The start shoot penalty didn't count towards qualification, but it did count against our time. So now we're up against 4 hours that we're being docked and that we're going to have to serve by waiting at this spot in Kansas. And we were two penalties shy of disqualification. So we're all really stressed that they're going to kick us out of the race.
So you don't just they don't just take it off your final time. You have to actually stop for that amount of time.
Which is another big problem I have with this.
And but it's more sleep time.
Well, we'll get to that.
Uh-oh.
We spend the night in Colorado. I get 90 minutes of sleep that night. So now in three nights, I've had 7.5 hours sleep.
You're on the Gordon Keith plan.
I'm not doing well. We get up. We drive ahead to this place called Kuchara Pass in southern Colorado, and we take over from the other team there. We got to go up Kuchara Pass. I posted a picture of that. We were at about 10,000 feet there. Beautiful descent, high winds, a little sketchy. And then we get down into eastern Colorado and western Kansas, and that is flat road. For the first time, we just have pancake flat roads outside of the California desert. It's pretty flat there, too. But we also have a tailwind, so now we're moving, and it's getting really fun, and we're all going fast, and we're getting to our next destination.
We're all best friends at this point.
We're all best friends. It was amazing. And we go through these roads of Kansas, and we get to Ulysses, Kansas, which is the next transition point. And it is also the place where you are to serve your penalties. And I posted a little bit about this on Twitter when we got into trouble, because we got there and the race officials seemed to be making up the rules on the fly. We called ahead. We made our official call and we said, okay, this is the official call. An hour out of Ulysses, how many penalties do we have to serve? And they said 4 hours worth. Okay, who needs to serve them? Four of your riders have to be here. Okay, well, we're all about there. We're about an hour away. So we get there. And then they say, no, all eight of your riders have to be here. And they have this old broken down bus and they tell us, and all eight of you have to sit in that bus for 4 hours.
What? In a broken down bus?
Yes. And I said,
is it air conditioned or?
No. And all of us said, that's the most ludicrous that we're, you're treating us like kids, putting us in time out. That's the most insane thing I've ever heard, that we have to sit in a bus for 4 hours.
Sir, would you like to make it five?
Yeah, they do the more teacher thing to you.
To serve the penalty. So meanwhile, we said, well, if we had known all eight of us have to be here, we'd have called our guys who were in a hotel, you know, 2 hours back up the road, and we told them to be here and meet us so we could start serving the penalty. They're 2 hours away, so now the 4 hours are going to turn into 6 hours, killing our time, killing our position on the road. So we're all really upset by this. So we made a call to the race CEO.
Ooh, you went to the top.
We went to the top.
Race CEO speaking. Who is this?
And I might have made a pretty good argument for our team, and he reduced the penalty to 3 hours. And which at that time we had been in Ulysses for 3 hours, and he said, okay, you're done. You can go now. That is when the hailstorm of all hailstorms hit. So right as we're ready to get on the road again, this ridiculous hailstorm hit, and I'm going to tweet a video that one of the guys on our team, Dino, took of the hailstorm. I'll do it in this commercial break. It's really funny, and it shows how crazy this hail and wind was. So that actually delayed us another couple of hours. So we ended up
because you couldn't ride in that.
Yeah,
it was that bad.
It was horrible. We ended up not getting out of Ulysses for 5 or 6 hours anyway.
Gosh!
But at least we got a couple of our penalties wiped out, and we didn't have to worry about that anymore. And you know, we said, we feel like you're picking on us because no other teams have more than one penalty. We would talk to other teams, and they'd say, "You guys have four penalties." They're picking on you. They're following you guys around. So we made our case, and they didn't give us any more penalties the rest of the way. We said, we're not out here trying to screw around. We just want to get to the finish safely.
Yeah.
You know, we're just out here to have fun and see America, and we're not trying to be jerks. So I think they heard us.
Sir, you're being belligerent with me right now.
We're going to have to session to the penalty for arguing.
Yes.
We got to spend the night in Ulysses. They went down the road, and so the next day we get up, we travel down the road, and we make another transition with them in eastern Kansas. And this was one of the really cool moments because the roads got really beautiful and rolling and twisty in eastern Kansas and beautiful countryside and also in western Missouri. And one of the guys on our team, John, came to the end of his leg and gave it to another one. And John was almost in tears. And he said, that was the greatest ride of my life because it reminded me of the rides I took with my brother when we were kids. Same kind of roads. And he had all these memories flooding back. And all of us experience this at some point. When you're going through this extreme physical stress, it really strips you down to your core. And we had a lot of tearful moments, you know, tears of joy or memories flooding back from all the fun you had riding bikes as a kid. And it was just so cool to see him, you know, grown man in almost breaking down because of these beautiful memories. So we had great moments like that.
That's awesome.
We're going through Missouri, and we have to ride through Missouri at night, so now the time has changed, and they've been doing all the night shifts, but now it's our turn to do the night shifts. So we ride through Missouri. I had a couple very close calls in Missouri. I almost T-boned a student driver. Did I tell you guys about that?
No.
She waited until I'm right there, and she pulls out in front of me, and I slam on the brakes, and her eyes got real big. And I had another moment where a semi forced me into the shoulder, and the shoulder in Missouri was horrible. It looked good. It looked like smooth black tar, but when you got up on it, it was all chunks of rocks and stones, and it took my front wheel and just shifted it left and right, and I was out of control of the bike. And somehow I kept it upright. I don't know, but I had two close calls there.
Should have stood your ground with a semi.
We pulled into a town called Woblo, Missouri in the middle of the night. It was a time station, and we were waiting for one of our riders to come in. And driving up, this is 2 a.m., this old woman gets out of the car, long gray hair, and she walks up to us and she goes, "You team 804? And we said, "Yeah." She goes, "Ah, I've been tracking you on my computer at home for the last 3 hours. I was wondering when you were going to get here."
She was just a random...
random race fan who lives in Woblo. And I guess the biggest event every year is when the Race Across America comes through Woblo. And so she tracks all the teams. And when they get to the station, she goes and says hi to them.
Huh. "You team 804? I'll take all four of you on right now."
And it was at one of the other time stations in far eastern Kansas, time station 30. It was this house, and every year they make the most. Their kids are out front with snow cones for the riders. They decorate their house, all these time station 30 flags. They get flags of all of the countries participating in the race, and they wave them when the riders come through. And so it was really interesting to see how people in these really small towns kind of embraced the race and really got into it, because it's the biggest thing that comes through their town.
Yeah.
And that was middle America, these small little towns that just got into it. And it was really cool to be able to sit there while you're waiting for the next rider to come in. You'd have 15 minutes just to talk to town locals. I talked to some kid who was just coming talk to the locals.
You talk to the locals.
Coming from basketball practice, and we talked about the history of their basketball team in Woblo, the Woblo Wolves or whatever they're called.
Any good? They won the title.
So eventually that night, we finished at 3:15 in the morning in Jefferson City, Missouri.
Oh, Jeff City.
And we'll pick the story. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. We stayed in a hotel very close to the Capitol. So tomorrow we'll pick up the story in Jefferson City, and I'll tell you about doing laundry and how it was the most satisfying trip to a laundromat in the history of my life. And tomorrow we'll also take you through the rest of the Midwest and to the finish